Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to another meeting of TCEA's EdTech Club. That's our podcast all about education and technology and how those two things fit together. And this week, we have a guest speaker who is really going to make that connection. Leslie Fisher is an education consultant, a tech expert, and former representative of Apple Computer. And she's going to take us through so many different ways to engage with technology. Now, this is going to be a fairly broad discussion, but we're going to cover tons of ground. So I hope you stay tuned for this one. And that's why I'm not keeping you too long on the prelude here. We're going to get right into this conversation because we get in-depth on a lot of different things and we go high level. We talk about the kinds of things teachers should be thinking about, the kinds of experimenting they do with technology, and the ways that feeds back into how technology is developed and then how it's used. So we're going to talk about that tech to education pathway, that pipeline, that feedback loop in this meeting of the EdTech Club. And it all starts right now. Hey folks, welcome back. Thanks for joining us for another meeting of the EdTech Club. As I said, this week we are featuring a discussion with Leslie Fisher that we recorded live at the 2020 TCEA Convention and Exposition, where she was a featured presenter. She kindly took about a half an hour of her time to talk to us about the connections between education and pedagogy and technology and the tech industry. So, I won't keep you anymore. We'll jump, as usual, right into our discussion, this time with Leslie Fisher. We are talking with our guest speaker, Leslie Fisher. She will tell you about herself, but to put it briefly, she's a tech expert. Started at a company called Apple Computer.
Small little company out of Cupertino, California.
And this was in 92, I think?
Yeah. Wow, you're good.
Yeah,
you read your notes.
Got them right here. So when it was still kind of a plucky upstart.
It was definitely not what it is today.
And so you've been involved in technology and educational technology since then. So I guess give us a little insight into that arc.
Yeah.
And how you went from industry to what you're doing now.
Yeah, and it's a pretty funny arc. And I'm sure a lot of you haven't heard this story because I'm usually in a 50-minute session with you guys. So I really enjoy the opportunity to tell you the story. And also, if you're a club, does this mean we're currently clubbing?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, we are in the club.
I just
right
want to make sure I tell people I got to go clubbing while I was in Austin.
Tuesday morning at the club. That's right.
When I was a sophomore at the University of Southern California, I started taking music education classes. Part of it was recording music, and I needed a computer to do that. So I was beating up my mom's Mac, and my mom told me, stop using my Mac so much, I need it. Go get your own Mac. So I went to the USC bookstore, and I started asking way too many questions, which I do. And I didn't know that I was actually talking to the Apple rep for USC, and she offered me a job on the spot.
Wow.
I was a USC student representative. I made $5 an hour, and I got one Mac every year. And my mom still tells the story about how she told me to go buy a Mac, and I came back with a free Mac and a job, and she knew that I was an okay kid.
Mm-hmm.
So even then, I was going and being deployed to Apple corporate events, mainly as like, hi, welcome, what's your name, here's your badge. But I was in that system kind of early. And I was at USC for 3 more years. I was there for 5 years because I started falling in love with the technology so much that I didn't want to be a music major anymore. I wanted to be a geek. So I was with Apple as a student rep, and I left. And when I graduated, I went straight to Apple, where I was in K-12. So I've always spoken to K-12 educators. I don't know how to speak to anyone else. And I started as a systems engineer, which makes me sound geeky, but that's more of I was the technical arm in a K-12 sales cycle. If you've ever had an Apple rep make a call and talk to you, a sales rep shows up, and then a systems engineer shows up, and that's what I did. So it was always K-12. It's always been K-12. And I would talk about what I would think would be engaging to teachers. And then in 1997, I got laid off. And when I got laid off, Apple was not doing well. If you remember back in those days, there were even rumors that HP was going to buy Apple. And it's funny to think about that now. How many HPs could Apple buy? And I had a year's severance package, and I was going to take 6 months off. And I'll tell you how I ended up in presenting, because it's hysterical. It was when web development was brand new, and I had a friend at LPGA Urban Youth Golf that needed a website. And I said, you know, I used to present at this conference for Apple, and they have a web strand. I'm going to go, and I'm going to attend a class. So I'm sitting in the audience for an all-day web development class, and there's no presenter. And the conference coordinator goes up on stage, and he begins to talk about, we need to find... Leslie? Hi. Hi. What are you doing in the audience? Got laid off. Friend needs a site. Okay, everyone, we found our presenter. If you'll give her a moment. And so that was 23 years ago. I paid $325 to teach an all-day web development class. And it was with a group called Classroom Connect. If you are old, if you're really established, you'll remember Classroom Connect. And I almost called you old, I'm sorry. And it was with Classroom Connect, and they did 8 shows a year and asked if I wanted to go across the country, and I said yes, and had absolutely no idea that there were these conference spies that would, spies is a bad word, but every conference checks out every other conference to see what they could be doing better, differently, or whatnot, and the rest is history. I just started getting approached from conference after conference, and that was 23 years ago, and never ever thought I would be in this capacity, but damn, am I happy to be in this capacity.
And we're happy to have you.
I'm thrilled.
Featured presenter this year, but this is not your first time at TCEA.
No, I'm guessing about my 20th time at TCEA. How I ended up presenting at TCEA is Adobe would have me present in their booth. And so I would do booth presentations in the Adobe booth. And from there, people would be like, well, why aren't you presenting elsewhere? And I would always say, well, that's a great question for TCEA. And so they finally took a chance on me, and they had me do my gadgets presentation, and the rest happily is history.
And this week you're doing 13
sessions? Yes, 13 sessions. Just a few.
Pretty booked up. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
But I looked through, and it covers everything. It covers Adobe, you're talking gadgets, but we're talking Microsoft,
yeah,
and
that
Google
one's
Suite,
new. Yep.
And so many other products. What do you tell a teacher who looks at this world of products, some of which are coming and going all the time, and they're saying, how do I even bother with figuring out the right tools?
You're asking a question that I always wonder, because one of the things I do to you, and this is my opportunity to say I'm sorry, is I give you guys a lot of stuff. And I know you're busy. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just shoving stuff after stuff after stuff. But some of you know that I struggle with learning. I struggle with reading. And I struggled all through school, and school was not something that was enjoyable for me unless I was playing music. And I very much, when I do what I do, I very much put myself in the place of what would Leslie, when she was 8 years old in school, be engaged with. So if you always wonder why I'm trying to show you a lot of things that I think are easy to do that are engaging, it's because I'm going straight to the likes of me. And I'm hoping that even if it's 2 kids in your class that will find benefit of what they're doing, of that solution, that they can have benefit of it. And the other thing is, you guys are slammed busy. Every year my love for you grows more and more, because the things that we ask of you is insane. Absolutely freaking insane. So I really want to try to find things that are easy on them as well. So I don't have a good answer, because even if I did, you guys are insane. And you know this. You are insane. And you will find one thing that you know will help one student, and you will spend 1 week learning that as best as you can for that one student. And I learned that more and more about you. So there's not one good answer, because even if you gave them everything, they would take it to another level to help out that one kid in the class.
It's kind of the difference between going to the store and buying a pre-made toolkit, maybe half of which you'll use.
Right.
And accruing tools you actually use over the years and building your own kit.
Absolutely. You got to let a teacher be a teacher. And one of the things that I never do is say this is how it should be done. And I think you guys have caught on to that. And there's a couple of reasons. One is I was never a teacher, so I don't feel I have a right to tell you how it should be done. The second one is you guys have vivid imaginations even more than mine. And you guys will take an idea that one company had, and you'll run in a completely different direction with it. And it's absolutely awesome to see. So you're right. It's very much, it should be make and take, and let a teacher be a teacher. And let a teacher take these hopefully great solutions we're showing them and make it their own, and help those students in their class.
You talked about struggling in school growing
yes.
up. And that doubtless shapes your perception
Absolutely.
And how you do your job now. And we were talking earlier, I understand even your perception of that has changed recently.
Yeah. So I've always known I've struggled with reading. I was amazed that no one diagnosed me until college, and I was diagnosed with dyslexia. I've never seen letters backwards, but I always know I struggle with reading. And it was when I became a musician, I really wanted to become a musician, and I could read music before I even knew what music was, if that makes sense. Like, I could see a score, and I could understand what that score meant. So I was really attracted to the idea of creating music. And then when technology came out, I think even then my brain was like, hold on, this could help you be better at this. And so for the longest time, I've known I struggled with reading, and I was just accepting that and moving along. And I already told a couple of you guys this. It was in April that my chiropractor was like, you know what, your eyes have never reacted when I work on you to how I think they should. And so they said, I really want you to see a vision specialist. So I saw a vision specialist, and the vision specialist said, you have something called binocular vision dysfunction. And I'm curious, how many of you have not heard of binocular vision dysfunction? And I have never heard of it either. And this is one of those things that I don't like to get preachy, soapboxy, but it is something I want to teach you guys about. Because as I begin to keynote, I have a keynote called A Struggle to Learn, and I mentioned binocular vision dysfunction. I will usually have one teacher come up to me, sometimes in tears, because they have been taught how to diagnose it, and they are diagnosing this correctly. My eyes do not work in symmetry with each other. If you look at me now, my head is lifted and my head is tilted. And I finally learned out why I do that. It's the only way that my eyes are in unison. And anytime I put my head down, sorry to hit the mic, real low, I actually get a little bit dizzy. Some of the symptoms of binocular vision dysfunction is I don't do well in crowds. So if you ever see me and I'm walking down the hallway and my head's a little down and I'm just focused on getting from point A to point B, it's because my surroundings are taking so much of my concentration. So always feel free to stop me. And some of you probably have noticed that if you do stop me in the hall, I probably sit there, I take one step and back up and I talk to you because I'm able to center myself and get a better feeling for what's going on around me. I still to this day can't parallel park. If I'm in a carpool lane and all the cars are zipping on the right, and I mean not zipping, they're going slow and I'm zipping, I actually have to leave that carpool lane because I struggle with it so much. So to me, as I've gone through this symptom list, it's been absolutely fascinating to know all these little quirks. We're all quirky, we know this, but all these little quirks that I had that I just thought were me being quirky, turns out a lot of it is related to my vision. You probably see if there's another presenter coming up onto the stage, I'm getting out of their way as quickly as possible because I know their stuff combined with my stuff will hurt my brain to do. So it's been super interesting. And the solution is vision therapy, which I've been doing vision therapy. It's also that I have two pairs of these lenses and two pair of a pair with purple because the purple tint calms my eyes because these lenses have prisms in there that are trying to push my eyes to where they should be. Every month I have a new vision test. I hand these glasses in, they should switch the lenses, I put the new ones in, and then we just keep rotating this every month. And it's interesting because I've noticed I'm even interacting in the hallways differently because my vision slowly but surely is beginning to get better. Binocular vision dysfunction is often misdiagnosed as ADHD and dyslexia. So if you have someone that you think is ADHD but you're not 100% sure, there's a good chance they simply might have a problem with their eye alignment. And the more vision specialists I bump into, the more they're like, we really just wish more people knew about this. Optometrists do not check for binocular vision dysfunction. They don't know what it is. It's an eye specialist. Also, if someone has had a concussion, they might have binocular vision dysfunction. And a lot of PTSD will have some form of binocular vision dysfunction if they had a concussion. So the whole thing's been to me, I know enough just to be dangerous. Because I've only had this in my life since April. But the more that I research it, the better that I feel, even in scenarios like this, the more that I want to make sure that people know about it and that maybe your special ed teachers or whatnot learn about it a little bit more, because I think every hand went up that they had no idea about it. And if you want to see some rock and purple frames, just let me know. They're in my backpack.
That's for after the show. Check it out. Exclusive to people here live. You know, we know that, and we say this often, that everyone learns differently.
Absolutely.
And we know there might be general categories, but you've given us a really strong example of there might be categories we just haven't identified or haven't named or just haven't talked about enough.
Yeah.
In your role as someone who presents on technology and ed tech, where do you see technology coming into issues like that?
Right. And it's a great question. Because I've been saying for the past year, are we done with technology being technology? I mean, now the phone in our hand is almost commonplace, and we used to look at this as a wonderful, amazing device. So then where does technology begin to become? Where does technology run to become technology? And in my humble opinion, right now, we're running to people that need assistance. And the big booms and the big things that are happening are people that need help. So I think we're really talking about accessibility. And accessibility, I've been absolutely loving seeing the efforts that so many of these companies are making to make sure that they are creating items that are accessible. And I love that. And not just accessible, the fact that the student that needs accessibility options can now hopefully be in the same location as a student that doesn't, get the same assignment, and then that student can almost create their own journey and use those accessibility tools on their own when another one uses a different set or no set at all, to me is just fantastic. And I just want to, I'll share a quick story. So last year, if you guys hang out with me, and I see a lot of familiar faces here, last year I had just started talking about Microsoft and how much I struggle with talking about Microsoft. I'm a 10-year Apple veteran. It's weird to say Microsoft. And one of the reasons I do is because they do have amazing accessibility features, and they also have this big passion. And one of the reasons they have this big passion is the CEO of Microsoft has two special needs children. And he has told his friends at Microsoft, design for one, and the rest will follow. Let's not look at price points and making money. Let's design for one, and the rest will follow. So a lot of times, like Immersive Reader, you've seen me show Immersive Reader. Do you guys know it was designed because one parent's daughter got lost, and the mom started telling the gang in the Microsoft booth about her dyslexic daughter, and they decided to create something for that daughter. Good news is the daughter was found. She was just down the way a little bit. And Immersive Reader came to life because they were talking to a frantic mom and learning about how her daughter struggled with reading. Design for one, the rest will follow. And I really love the fact that technology-wise, that's what we're beginning to be at, and it's great.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of tools as well. We know there's a world of different people trying to learn, but there's no shortage of tools, and that's what's overwhelming. But a convention like this gives us the opportunity. You have a story that I didn't know.
Yeah.
But I can take that knowledge and apply it.
Right.
You know, folks here listening can apply that in the classroom.
Yeah.
I think that's really big.
No, thank you.
And I would like to ask, I guess, from the perspective of bridging industry to educators, and those are two groups that might not understand each other all the time.
Yeah.
What are the important points if you had to explain that bridge between tech industry and education and ed tech, what should both sides know?
It's such a great question, and you hear me laughing, because like one of the more entertaining things for me is like when a company approaches me and goes, yeah, we haven't thought about getting into education. And I just really want to be like, okay, so you have these buildings that have a bunch of adults and kids in them and that have price points and you can make money and you haven't thought about it. Instead, you're looking at each and okay. The bridge between industry and education is almost hysterically diverse. And I'm amazed sometimes when companies think about getting into education, the lack of education that they have about education. I'm seeing heads nod, so you agree. And I think you guys know this. You guys are unique beings, and you are so different than business. And I love that. And what I think they need to know, what a business needs to know, is everything you think you know about education is incorrect. And almost everything I think about educators that I know is incorrect, because the minute you give them something new that is going to be engaging, that educator is going to take it and do amazing things with it. So I will always tell businesses to create the best thing you can create. Don't expect it to be used as you think it's going to be used by an educator, because that educator is going to go mad and do other things. And you need to be open to accept that. And I think a great example of that is Merge. If you guys remember Merge Cube Madness 2 years ago, where we had an entertainment company that a bunch of educators, because Walmart blew out the Merge Cubes, all of a sudden all these educators show up. And I remember the call with them very well. We really don't know educators that well. And I said, get ready. They'll be more than happy to introduce them to you. And now Merge is a full-blown education company because they took that time to step back and go, we need to learn educators. So I hope that answered the question.
No, I think so. And okay. It makes you wonder, that educators are going to take a new tool, and they're going to experiment.
They're going to go run wild.
They're going to, and even more so, when students get a handle on the technology, they're going to run with it, and they're going to try new things that the teacher didn't even expect.
Yep.
So industry has this huge field of beta testers excited to try all these things. Is there a recognition of that yet, or is that growing?
Well, I think there's a recognition of it, but there's also a fear of recognition, because we run into the idea of, and I'm sure educators have bumped into this, where if you champion a product, is that, you know, how is that product going to accept it, or how is that teacher going to be viewed? So it's a really interesting thing, like with things like ambassador programs or whatnot, that a business doesn't want an educator to be seen in the incorrect light, so to speak, is what I will say. But I also will say there's not enough recognition. And we know this. Teachers don't get recognized enough. And it's an absolute shame. And nor do the students get recognized enough, because there are so many things that you'll see change because a student had that idea, or that student ran into something. But no, there's not enough recognition. But also part of that is the fear of over-recognizing. I hope you know what I mean when I say that. I'll give it an example. There's a company that there are rules with public education about how you can compensate, how you can say thank you, and they don't want to get in trouble. So, you know, I think if I could, I'd give every teacher a car, but I can't, sorry. But those sort of things. I don't think I answered that one that well. But
No. Okay. Knocked it out of the park. Don't worry. So I think that's fascinating. I guess what I would ask next then, if I'm an educator,
yeah,
and I want to build the bridge,
yeah,
to industry, what should I be thinking? What should I be doing?
Well, my biggest hope is you build the bridge because you want that product to be better, or you simply want to be able to add a different thing than what you're doing in your day-to-day classroom. And one of the things I'll tell you guys is that companies are really, really wanting educator feedback. So if there's a product that you really like that you think could be a little different, approach that company. And there are ambassador programs, and you guys shape so much of what is changing and happening out there. So please add your voice to that. And a lot of times, following the rules, you can go to a conference for free. And you could present possibly. There are so many presenters out there that started as an educator that really loved a product, that was using it in a creative way, and started sharing that creativity with others at presentations, and that grew and grew and grew. But the thing is, you gotta love it. You don't wanna do it just because you wanna present. You gotta do it because you love what you're doing. And I just wanna say something real quick also about students. We're living in an amazing world right now where, when I was in school, a student would never admit that they didn't know something or something was wrong, or not even question a teacher. And what I love is so many of these classrooms now, we go in it like we're all in this together. A teacher will say to the students, I don't know 100% of what this does, but let's learn together. And that opens up so many roles of engagement, because it almost allows the student to fail. Because in the process of trying to help, oh, that wasn't it. Okay, let's keep trying. The answer's here somewhere. And what an amazing thing that we're kind of in that dynamic. And then to add to it, what an amazing thing that I just gave a presentation and there were something like 82 tweets that were sent, and it was educators sharing with other educators some of the things that they learned. I mean, that is just fantastic. And we live in a world of great time when information is so freely shared to help educate other educators, and educators are walking into classrooms where their students are collaborators and their students are helpers. And we're all learning together, be it right or wrong. It's just a great thing. And those are the things also businesses need to learn from, because what you're doing is you're showing how a small business runs, and it's called your classroom.
You know, it's really interesting to think, too, about generational changes. You talk about students today are engaged. You know, they're going for it.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, Yoda told them it's okay to fail and learn from,
yeah,
it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a millennial. That's what they call,
yeah,
us. You may have heard of us. We killed Applebee's.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
There's microwaves in every kitchen. Hold on. This is going live. Never knew that. Nope. There's
no,
a grill.
We'll
there's a grill.
We can, okay. It's okay. You're,
oh,
you're safe. Yeah,
Don't
want to
get sued by,
yeah, won't be calling.
Okay.
But I think the generation in K-12 education now, this Zoomer generation,
yeah,
and younger, they've always had access to information. They have always known that they can go find something if they need it. And maybe they don't suffer fools as easily because they know that resources are out there. Do you get that, Reed?
Yeah, and so once again, as someone who's never had kids in a classroom, I could simply go by my gut, my friends' kids, and what you guys tell me. And this is a crazy time to be teaching. because your students are walking around with devices that they can sit there and say, hold on, but this says this. And then that also means that a lot of times you guys have to change up a little bit of how you're teaching. And you guys are going through that struggle right now, and that struggle's got to be really hard, is do I keep teaching math this way when this is existing on the internet, or do I change the way that this goes because the content is different? And I don't have a good answer to that, because we've never had such a paradigm shift in the classroom as we have. Do you guys feel that same way right now? We've never had. And so one thing I'll say is just don't take it too hard on yourself. Because I couldn't even imagine being a teacher in a classroom right now with the rules changing as it is, with our students getting content as they're getting content. But yeah, it's a really interesting time. And we'll see teaching slowly change. And at the same point, I'd really think that has to come from a higher level in terms of just what are they expecting and requiring you to do to meet certain demands statewide or whatnot. And I think we're seeing those change as well, because it has to change from all. And the more that has to change, the more it's turning that Titanic versus a speedboat. So,
And, you know, at TCEA, we're constantly watching educators communicate digitally.
Yeah.
But there is also power in coming to a convention, a conference.
Absolutely.
Because you make that immediate connection. You can explain something a lot faster sometimes when you're just chatting with someone.
Yeah.
So there's power in that. If I'm an educator and I come to conferences like TCEA and I'm like, I'm loving the vibe, this is so exciting, and I've got something I'm passionate about, what's the advice you'd give to an educator who wants to present in the future?
Yeah, good question. First of all, if I want to say, I always love to admit when you're wrong. And when Twitter and Facebook and all that came out, I was like, wow, this isn't going to be good for conferences. This isn't going to be good for conferences. People aren't going to attend conferences. And look what happened. It's the exact opposite. Because you make those quote-unquote birds of a feather, and you hear they're going to be at a conference, and then you want to go see them at the conference, which I just think is so cool. If you want to share something you're doing, great. You can obviously apply for free to present at the TCEAs of the world or whatnot. I will tell you this. A lot of times conferences have a struggle with figuring out if that person, okay, they put together a great proposal, can they present well? So one of the big suggestions I would give you is when you do send in a proposal, make a video of yourself presenting in your classroom. Make a video of yourself presenting in PD. Make a video of yourself so they can see that you're the full package. And that will really, really help your chances. Because once they realize, okay, cool, they're a great presenter. They put together a great proposal. Let's go with that person. And a lot of times you're going to be presenting for free. I mean, even me at TCEA, the first few years that they asked me to come and present, I presented for free. But I realized, I hope I'm a smart businesswoman, and I know a businesswoman or a business person in general would say, there's no way that I can just show up and expect to get X without proving myself. And so I looked at that very much as my proving time, and I'm still doing that for certain companies, showing them that, you know, I can present or whatnot. So just get ready for that, and it gets back to do it because you love to do it. And you guys, presenting to you is one of the most fortunate things to happen to me. And so if you're lucky enough to present to your teachers, you're going to find people that are simply going to want to help you on that journey. And they're going to want to help educate you, because they know if they educate you and you continue presenting, their words are going to help go into all other classrooms across the world. So it's a great thing. And I would also say this, don't be nervous. I was like, oh, I'm so nervous. I'm so scared. You guys are gentle giants to present to. And if you're prepared, like how many of you are in my class where the internet died? My fault. It worked. It wasn't my fault, and I was prepared. And I think everyone knew I was prepared. If I wasn't prepared, and then people would be like, come on. So I always tell people, have passion and be prepared. And educators are very forgiving when it comes to something getting in the way. Here's the other thing. I'm sure you guys learned a couple things with it dying of what to do when something gets cranky. So, but do it. What's the worst that's going to happen? Do it.
I like that. Well, here, what's the worst that does happen? What's a complete failure story that we can give to maybe bolster?
Sure, you're going back to the days I'm going to need a drink tonight.
That's right.
It easily was a conference where all of the lights went out. And there was 2,000 people in the audience. All the lights went out. The screen behind me was like one of those LED screens. Mm. All that went out. All the lights went out. The projectors went out. Everything went out. And I had like 40 minutes left. And I was like, do we cancel class or do we not? And I'm a tinkerer. I'm always like, I'd rather try and have it fail than just say, okay, class is over. So I'm like, I'd rather try and fail. So all of a sudden, I realized my Wi-Fi was still working. And with my Wi-Fi still working, I went and I did screen sharing. And so everyone used screen sharing, and I pushed my presentation. But the problem was, with 2,000 people, my microphone wasn't working. So I took my, I unplugged everything because it wasn't getting power. It wasn't on the projector anymore. And I ran to the middle of the room, and I stood on someone's chair with my computer, and I yelled out the big points, like almost like bullet point, quick. And I had everyone turn and yell it to them. And then the slide would change and we'd do it again. And I kidded around that it was like a game of telephone, like the group at the end probably got the incorrect stuff at the end. And whoops, I keep this mic, sorry about it. But that was probably the worst thing in terms of just all the technology dying. But I'm a big believer that if you have something to say and you can say it well, we really don't need the technology to do so. It really helps the cause, but we don't need the technology to do so. That was the first. And then the one, there was another one where I literally on a keynote was like, "Hi everyone, my name is Leslie Fisher." And then all the lights go out and the emergency lights go on. So that was a, you got to get out. And a truck had hit the main power line in the city, knocked out all the city's power. And so once everyone was out, they decided to call the conference, and never made more money by saying less words than that. I felt terrible. I felt terrible, but they're like, "Nah, we're still paying you." So
yeah. So you are a world traveler,
yeah,
presenting. You were mentioning you were in the UK.
Yep.
You're in Ireland.
Yep.
Just not part of the UK.
Yeah.
And so you're probably tough to keep up with, but if I like what you have to say,
yeah,
and I want to follow you and I want to keep up with the things you're, yeah, talking about, what's the best way?
Oh,
give us your plugs.
My website's lesliefisher.com. That will give you all my social media items. I think if you've been in a presentation with me before, I try to not force you onto social media with me. I always feel I want to get organic followers. My Twitter is my name, at Leslie Fisher, LeslieFisher. My Facebook is Leslie Fisher's page. Because I suffer with reading, during a conference, when tweets are sent, like I saw the sweetest tweets, and you haven't seen a single reply from me, because it really takes a long time for me to read those tweets and reply to them. So I usually wait about a week, and I reply to all your tweets. And my direct message is open as well. So even if I don't follow you, I don't follow a lot, because once again, I can't take a lot of content. I reply to direct messages, and then I'll just say this shout out real quick. The only way I keep in business is by presenting at conferences and professional development days or whatnot. So if you think I would be handy for a conference you know about or a PD day at your site or whatnot, please feel free to let me know. Or if there's another conference out there that you're like, "Why is Leslie never at that one?" Feel free to ask that question to that conference. And I also want to say TCEA, easily one of my favorite conferences. It's just a joy. I woke up at 4 with an insane energy because it's just educators are awesome.
Well, we are thrilled to have you.
I'm thrilled to be here, as always.
We're grateful for you spending the time with us here on the podcast.
Pleasure.
I know you've got about a dozen sessions to get to this week, so we won't keep you any longer.
No worries.
But folks, please help me thank Leslie Fisher.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for hanging out. I appreciate it. You guys probably learned a new thing or two.
Okay, folks, that's it for this meeting of the EdTech Club. We have officially run out of time, but I'll give you a little bit of housekeeping here. First, there is no homework this week. Why would I do that to you? We're all busy enough as it is. So, no homework this week, but if you want some extra credit and you want to ramp up your remote teaching and learning, go ahead and check out TCEA's new Remote Learning Hub. That's at tcea.org/remote-learning. There you'll find videos, blog articles, and podcasts, as well as daily in-person live discussions that can help you weather the changes of teaching and learning remotely and make the most of your remote teaching time. So that's it for the extra credit, and that is it for this episode. But as always, if you want to keep up with the latest from TCEA, especially now, check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Instagram, Pinterest, and more. And if you have comments, questions, or would like to be on the podcast to talk about something you're passionate about, hit us up at podcast@tcea.org. That's all we've got. And until next time, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.